There are places in America where you can own a flamethrower, build a trebuchet in your driveway, and legally keep a pet alligator. But the moment you try to live in a 200-square-foot house you built with your own hands, suddenly you're a threat to public safety. Welcome to the quiet war on tiny houses, a bureaucratic siege so subtle most people don't even notice it's happening. Because here's the thing. Tiny houses aren't banned in America. Not officially. No governor stood at a podium and declared, "We must stop these miniature dwellings at all costs." There's no federal law against small homes, no constitutional amendment banning 150-square-foot living rooms. Instead, the system found something far more effective. Definitions, zoning categories, minimum square footage rules, permanent foundation requirements, septic mandates, RV classifications, occupancy restrictions. 1,000 small rules that never mention tiny houses by name, but make them functionally illegal almost everywhere. It's the kind of ban that doesn't announce itself. It just quietly rearranges the paperwork until your dream home becomes a non-compliant, temporary structure that needs to be removed within 30 days. And the wildest part? Most of it happened while tiny house TV shows were still on the air, making it look like this lifestyle was not only legal, but trendy. So before we dive into the 7 states where tiny house freedom goes to die in a filing cabinet, hit that subscribe button. Not because I need validation, but because every time you do, a zoning inspector somewhere loses the ability to measure someone's roof pitch. And honestly, that feels like justice. If you want more videos about the parts of America where regulations forgot to show up or remembered a little too well, subscribe now. Because freedom's complicated and somebody needs to read the fine print. Good. Let's begin. The tiny house movement started with a simple, almost radical idea. What if you could own a home without spending 30 years paying interest to a bank? What if shelter didn't require debt, stress, and a mortgage that outlives your enthusiasm for living? For a while, it worked. People built small homes on trailers, parked them on private land, and lived quietly. Some went off-grid. Some stayed connected to utilities. But they all shared the same dream: simplicity, ownership, and a life measured in something other than square footage. Then the inspectors showed up. Not all at once, not dramatically, just slowly, county by county, citation by citation, until the tiny house dream started looking less like freedom and more like a compliance nightmare with cedar siding. Because tiny houses exist in a legal gray zone that most housing codes were never designed to handle. They're too small to be real houses, too permanent to be RVs, too unconventional to fit neatly into zoning maps that were drawn in 1952 by men who thought a 2-car garage was non-negotiable. And when the system encounters something it doesn't understand, it doesn't adapt, it restricts. Let's start in the place that markets itself as progressive, green, and sustainability obsessed, but treats tiny houses like architectural crimes. California loves the idea of tiny houses. The concept, the aesthetic, the Instagram photos of minimalist interiors with succulents on floating shelves, but actually living in one, that's where things get complicated. On paper, California allows tiny houses. You can find articles, blog posts, and optimistic forum threads explaining how it's totally legal as long as you follow the rules. And technically, that's true. But the rules are where the dream quietly suffocates under a pile of compliance paperwork. In most California counties, tiny houses are only permitted as accessory dwelling units, ADUs. That sounds reasonable until you realize what it actually means. Your tiny house can exist, but only as a secondary structure on a property that already has a primary house. You can't just buy land and live in a tiny home. You need a real house first, and then, maybe, the county will let your tiny house exist in its shadow like an architectural sidekick. And if your tiny house is on wheels, forget it. California treats those as recreational vehicles, which means they fall under RV zoning. And RV zoning has one very specific rule. You can park there, but you can't live there. Or more precisely, you can stay temporarily, maybe 30 days, maybe 90. But full-time occupancy is prohibited in most jurisdictions, so you can own the land. You can own the tiny house. You just can't combine them into a life without violating some code buried in Section 17, whatever, of the County Municipal Handbook. One couple in Sonoma County built a beautiful tiny home, solar panels, composting toilet, rainwater system, everything off-grid, everything functional. The county called it an unpermitted dwelling and issued a violation notice. They weren't allowed to live in it full-time because it didn't meet minimum square footage requirements. It wasn't about safety. It was about definitions. And the enforcement? It's not loud. It's not dramatic. It's just a letter in the mail one day that says your home doesn't qualify as a home. Welcome to California, where sustainability is mandatory, as long as it's the kind that still pays utility bills. If California is passive-aggressive about tiny houses, Colorado is just confused. Colorado has this reputation as a rugged, independent, mountain freedom kind of state. People imagine living off-grid in the Rockies, building cabins with their own hands, and answering to no one but the elk. But tiny houses? That's where Colorado's libertarian streak meets its love of county-level bureaucracy, and the result is chaos. There's no statewide tiny house policy. Every county writes its own rules. Some are lenient, some are strict. Some change their minds halfway through your build because a new planning director got hired and decided minimalism is a public health risk. In many Colorado counties, tiny houses are only allowed if they're on a permanent foundation. That means your tiny house on wheels, the thing that makes it affordable, mobile, and adaptable, doesn't count as a house. It's classified as an RV, which means it's subject to RV zoning, which means you can park it, but not live in it full time. One man in Boulder County spent 2 years navigating permits, zoning hearings, and code interpretations just to place a 250 square foot tiny home on his own land. He followed every rule, hired engineers, submitted drawings. The county approved it, then revised the zoning 6 months later and told him he couldn't occupy it full time because it was temporary in nature. Temporary, a house he bolted to a foundation. And here's the kicker. Colorado's building codes require all dwellings to meet international residential code standards, which include minimum ceiling heights, emergency egress windows, and stairway specifications that are nearly impossible to fit into a 200 square foot structure without making the whole thing feel like a vertical filing cabinet. So you can build a tiny house in Colorado. You just can't make it small enough to be affordable, mobile enough to be practical, or simple enough to avoid hiring 3 different engineers. Freedom, but only if it's complicated and expensive. Now, let's head south to the place that claims to love independence more than oxygen. Texas, the state of big skies, bigger opinions, and a cultural obsession with personal freedom that somehow evaporates the moment you try to live in a house under 400 square feet. Texas has no statewide zoning, which sounds like a tiny house paradise until you realize that every county gets to make its own rules, and most of them treat tiny houses like rolling health violations. Want to live in a tiny house in rural Texas? Great. First, you'll need a state-approved septic system, even if you're using a composting toilet that produces zero waste. That septic system will cost you anywhere from $3,000 to $10,000 to install, and it has to be designed by a licensed engineer and inspected by the county. Your beautiful, self-contained, off-grid, tiny home? The one that needs no sewer connection? Doesn't matter. If it's classified as a dwelling, it needs a septic system. That's the rule. And if your tiny house is on wheels, Most Texas counties classify it as an RV, which means it's subject to temporary occupancy rules. You can stay for a few weeks, maybe a few months, but living there full-time? That's unlawful permanent occupancy of a recreational vehicle. One family near Austin built a tiny home on their own land, solar-powered rainwater collection, everything legal and functional. The county issued a citation because the structure wasn't connected to municipal utilities. They said it was uninhabitable. The family pointed out they'd been living there comfortably for 6 months. The county said that didn't matter. The definition of habitable wasn't about whether humans could live there. It was about whether the house met code requirements for utility hookups. So Texas will let you own a flamethrower, a pet tiger, and 500 acres of scrubland. But live in a small, self-sufficient house? That's where freedom needs a permit. Next, we head to Florida, where the weather is unpredictable, the rules are contradictory, and your tiny house is technically a hurricane hazard. Florida is a strange place for tiny houses, because the state itself doesn't really regulate them. Counties do. And Florida counties are run by people who've seen enough weird stuff that they're not taking chances. In most of Florida, tiny houses on wheels are classified as RVs, and RVs are subject to strict zoning that prohibits long-term or permanent residence. You can park your tiny house at an RV park, stay for a few months, and then move along. But settle down, plant a garden, and start calling it home. That's when code enforcement starts paying attention. And if you try to build a tiny house on a permanent foundation, you'll run into Florida's building codes, which include hurricane and wind load requirements that make construction significantly more expensive. You're not just building a small house. You're building a small house that has to survive 150 mile per hour winds without turning into airborne shrapnel. One couple in the panhandle built a tiny house designed to every Florida code standard: impact-resistant windows, engineered framing, proper anchoring. The county approved the structure, but denied the occupancy permit because the house didn't meet minimum square footage requirements for a single-family dwelling. It was 280 square feet. The county minimum? 600. So they owned a fully legal, code-compliant house they weren't allowed to live in. Florida doesn't hate tiny houses. It just defines them out of existence. Now we head north, to the state that will tax your lemonade stand, but let you pay $3,000 a month for a closet in Manhattan. New York, the place where freedom costs extra and comes with a permit application. New York's uniform. Fire prevention and building code applies statewide, which means every tiny house, whether in Brooklyn or the Adirondacks, has to meet the same standards as a suburban colonial. Minimum room sizes, ceiling heights, emergency egress, insulation standards, electrical inspections, and minimum dwelling size rules? Those vary by county, but many jurisdictions set the floor at 400 to 600 square feet, which automatically disqualifies most tiny houses from being classified as dwellings. If your tiny house doesn't meet those standards, it's not a house. It's a temporary structure, which means you can't live in it full time. You can use it as a shed, a guest cabin, or an expensive lawn ornament, but occupancy is prohibited. One builder in the Catskills created a tiny house specifically for off-grid living: solar panels, rainwater system, wood stove. Beautiful craftsmanship. The county told him it couldn't be occupied because it wasn't connected to municipal water and sewer. He explained that it didn't need to be. It was entirely self-sufficient. The county said that was exactly the problem. New York loves green energy. It loves sustainability initiatives. It loves tiny house aesthetics and design magazines. It just doesn't love people actually living in them without paying for infrastructure they don't use. Let's head west one more time, to the land of flannel, coffee, and bureaucratic contradictions. Oregon markets itself as the most eco-conscious state in America. composting isn't just encouraged, it's a lifestyle. Recycling bins have their own recycling bins. The state motto might as well be sustainability or else. So you'd think tiny houses would be embraced, celebrated, possibly given their own parade. Instead, Oregon treats them like adorable crimes. The state has strict permitting requirements for any dwelling, and most counties define dwelling in ways that exclude tiny houses by default. If it's on wheels, it's an RV. And RVs can't be permanent residences. If it's on a foundation but under 400 square feet, it might not meet minimum size requirements. And even when you do everything right, permanent foundation, proper permits, inspections, counties can still deny occupancy if the structure doesn't fit their vision of what a home should be. One family in Southern Oregon built a tiny house that met every building code, passed every inspection, and was approved by the county. Then, 6 months later, the county changed the zoning classification of their land and informed them their house was now non-conforming. They could keep it, but they couldn't live in it. Oregon loves sustainability, as long as it's the corporate kind that still pays into the grid. Finally, let's visit Washington, where tech money, progressive politics, and housing regulations collide in the most painfully ironic way possible. Washington State talks about affordable housing constantly. It's a crisis, a priority, a tragedy. Politicians give speeches, advocates hold rallies, and everyone agrees something must be done. And then someone tries to build a tiny house, and the system says, "Wait, not like that." In most Washington counties, tiny houses are restricted to ADU use, meaning you need a primary house first, or they're classified as RVs, meaning you can't live in them full-time, or they're subject to zoning rules that make them functionally illegal, despite being theoretically allowed. One couple near Seattle built a tiny house on family land, fully permitted and inspected. The county later informed them that while the structure was legal, full-time occupancy violated local housing ordinances because the house was not a permanent dwelling. It was bolted to a concrete foundation. Washington loves innovation, sustainability, and progressive housing policy. It just prefers that innovation stay theoretical. So there you have it. 7 states. 7 different ways to quietly strangle the tiny house dream without ever saying it out loud. Because that's the thing about modern America. Freedom isn't outlawed, it's just reclassified, redefined, and regulated into a corner until it stops being practical. Tiny houses aren't banned, they're just incompatible with definitions, zoning maps, and minimum square footage rules written by people who thought small home meant 2,000 square feet instead of 3,000. The system doesn't hate tiny houses, it just refuses to make room for them. And maybe that's the real lesson here, not that tiny houses failed, but that they revealed something uncomfortable about the American housing system. It was never designed for simplicity, affordability, or independence. It was designed for mortgages, utility bills, and tax revenue. Tiny houses were a test, and the system failed it quietly, one permit denial at a time. But somewhere out there, in the margins and the loopholes and the counties that forgot to update their codes, people are still building them, still living in them, still proving that you don't need 2,000 square feet and a 30-year loan to call something home. And that's the kind of rebellion that doesn't need a permit.